Support for this broadcast of Two Rivers 30 Minutes comes in part from a grant from Striffler's Family Funeral Homes.
From TubeCityOnline.com, this is Two Rivers 30 Minutes, a weekly series of interviews with people making news around the McKeesport area. Produced by Tube City Community Media Incorporated, a nonprofit corporation. I'm Jason Toger, the executive director. On this show, we talk one-on-one with elected officials, community leaders, and others who are trying to make a difference in the Monongahela area. And we also take your questions and comments on Facebook and Twitter at Tube City Online.
We had a story on our website a couple of weeks ago, or maybe last week, I guess it was, about shortages in police departments all over the state of Pennsylvania, struggling to find enough people, something like 1,000 to 2,000 vacant positions in police departments all across the state of Pennsylvania. Volunteer fire departments feeling the same pinch, incentives, several different departments in western Pennsylvania looking for ways to incentivize people to volunteer for the fire department. And I think the same issue is confronting our emergency medical services. It's something that you pick up the phone, you dial 911, and you expect an ambulance to be there. You don't often think about the mechanism and the people behind making sure that that ambulance gets to your door. White Oak EMS is celebrating its 40th anniversary this year, and with us this morning to talk about his own personal journey through being an emergency medical professional and also about the 40th anniversary of White Oak EMS is Paul Falavolito. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, sir. Thanks for having me.
Paul also has his own podcast, and we're going to ask you about that in a little while, so stay tuned for that. Paul, what is your title with White Oak EMS?
I'm the chief of White Oak EMS.
Okay. He's the chief of and you are also deputy chief, I think, of emergency management for the borough?
That's correct.
Okay. How long have you been involved as a first responder?
About 26 years now.
What made you interested in this? Because a lot of people like to sleep in when the fire whistle goes off at 2 o'clock in the morning. A lot of us like to go back to bed.
Yeah, it's kind of a unique story. In my early days, I fell in love with scuba diving in high school and took that as an extracurricular class, went into the military with that, got out of the military, taught scuba diving all over the world. And when I was in Florida training some of the first responders down there for dive rescue, water rescue, river rescue, all that kind of stuff is when the JetBlue crash happened in the Everglades.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. So we were there training, went, responded to that scene, and that was my first true experience with responding to an emergency. And I kind of got bit by that bug, came back to Pittsburgh, went to EMT school, went to paramedic school, and 26 years later, I am still with White Oak EMS, the first service that hired me out of that graduation.
That's pretty unusual now for someone who's been 26 years with an organization, but that's a pretty cool journey. Paul Falavolito is chief of White Oak EMS. WhiteOakEMS.com. You serve the borough of White Oak. Are there any other – I mean, I know you do mutual aid into other communities.
Yeah, so we service – our primary service area is White Oak, South Versailles, and Versailles Borough. And then we do mutual aid into North Versailles and McKeesport when they need us.
How many crew members do you have?
So we have two 24-hour crews, 7 days a week, and then we do have a dedicated transport truck Monday through Friday that services other contracts for non-emergency transport work.
40 years. So what is some of that you've been – and you've been part of that for more than half of it. What is the history of White Oak EMS? Where were the origins?
Yeah, so 1984, a gentleman named Jack Petro and his father created White Oak EMS. It's a 501c3 nonprofit ambulance service. And, they saw the need for good quality professional emergency medical service for White Oak. They created it. They had a tremendous group of volunteers back in that time. And, sadly, volunteerism over the years is certainly something we can discuss because it's very similar to what we're experiencing now with our staffing crisis. You know, volunteerism quickly got replaced by people that wanted a paycheck to do the job. And it's because, you know, back in the day, you could go to EMT and paramedic school for a couple $100. Mm-hmm. And, like, I can remember when I went to paramedic school, I think my paramedic school was maybe $500. And I can remember looking at that piece of paper saying, where am I going to get that money from?
Yeah.
You know, and now, you know, now today it's $5,000 to go to that school.
I just heard an interview with Carol Burnett, and she said that she wanted to go to University of Southern California, and the tuition the first year was $45, I think she said.
Yeah.
So things have gotten a little bit more expensive.
Yep. So, you know, so now, you know, the people that are, you know, going to this school and getting this training and getting these certifications, you know, a lot of them have student loans they have to pay back. They want paid for that. And, you know, so the paid stuff has certainly outpaced the volunteerism, which is sad because, you know, again, back then, you know, volunteerism is really what allowed White Oak EMS to grow and put us on the map of being the quality service that we are today. We still have a few handful of volunteers, but not nearly what it used to be.
The history of ambulance services is not that old in this country, correct?
I mean, no, it's really not.
When I was a wee little kid, I can remember when the funeral homes still had ambulances in the Luck Towns.
Absolutely. And the Striffler family was instrumental in helping us get our first ambulance, you know, back then. And, you know, we still maintain a great relationship with them as well to this day.
You mentioned the amount of training has increased and going to school has increased. I think in the early days, a lot of times people really didn't very have much. Maybe they had some first aid training, but the goal was to just scoop someone up and take them to the hospital as quick as you could.
Yeah, pretty much that's how it was, you know, way back then. And then it really became formalized, you know, back in the 70s, early 80s. City of Pittsburgh was instrumental in putting that on the map with the Freedom House, and you hear a lot about that in the media today. And so, you know, it is what it is today because of the foundations from which EMS was founded.
And my understanding is a lot of it was brought back domestically from men and women who had served overseas in the Army, Navy, had become medical corpsmen and brought some of those techniques back then home and implemented them.
Yeah, absolutely, especially in today's modern emergency medicine that we do in the field, specifically for a lot of these, you know, active shooter, hostile events stuff. The techniques that we're being taught today are coming straight from the military, the TCCC, the Tactical Combat Casualty Care Course. And our people go through that every 3 years. So yeah, we actually have a former Special Forces guy that comes in to teach that class for us. And so that's something that, you know, a lot of the public doesn't necessarily know about. You know, yes, we go to that formal EMT or paramedic school, but we're bringing people in constantly throughout the years to help enhance that training so that we can be on the forefront of life-saving techniques.
Paul Falavolito is chief of White Oak EMS. They are celebrating their 40th anniversary. Coming up in a little while, I want to ask you if there are going to be any special events, open houses, things like that, that people can, especially if they live in the White Oak, Versailles, South Versailles area, can come see your station, but also from McKeesport and North Versailles. You mentioned something that I think is a distinction that's important. What is the difference? And maybe it's a distinction that for the general public doesn't matter much. What is the difference between a paramedic and an EMT?
So an EMT pretty much will go to school for upwards of about 3 to 6 months, and they will learn a lot of advanced first aid. They will learn a lot of newer stuff that's starting to creep closer towards being a paramedic. They're starting to be able to give certain medications now and do certain types of things. They also learn all the nuances of the specialty equipment that we carry and how to be a great paramedic assistant. Now, a paramedic will go to school anywhere from 1 to 2 years, depending if they go full-time or part-time. And throughout the course of that training, they will have to do clinical hours or rounds, the same way that a medical student does through the hospital. They'll have to do so many hours in the ER, so many hours on a burn unit, so many hours in labor and delivery. They'll have to go into the operating room and intubate so many patients. So it's really like a little mini med school compressed into 2 years. And then when a paramedic gets their certification and graduates, they get on with a service, and then they have to get something that's called medical command. We get our medical command from UPMC McKeesport, which means that medical director, that ER physician, we use her license for all of our paramedics are under her license to be able to do what we do. And so every year, every paramedic has to have so many hours of continuous education training. And then every year we go through what's called a skills review, where we meet with that physician or that medical director And they kind of put us through the paces. And at the end of that, they say, okay, you're good to go to use my license for another year. So that's really the big difference. So you can kind of look at paramedics almost like, you know, we can almost do kind of everything that an ER doctor can do, but we do it in the back of a moving vehicle.
I've heard ambulances called emergency rooms on wheels sometimes.
Yeah.
Because you mentioned intubation, you mentioned burn unit, you mentioned delivering a baby. These are all the kinds of situations that a paramedic might confront on his or her daily shift.
Absolutely.
Let's pause right there. When we come back, I want to ask you about how the equipment has changed since you've been there for 25 years, 26 years. You've seen a lot of changes. Paul Falavolito is chief of White Oak EMS. They are celebrating their 40th anniversary this year. 412-672-5433 is the non-emergency number, or just visit their website at whiteoakems.com. We'll be right back.
Support for this broadcast comes from Striffler's Family Funeral Homes. Since 1866, Striffler's has provided compassionate, professional memorial services for families in White Oak, McKeesport, Dravosburg, Portview, and the surrounding areas. Striffler's offers comprehensive pre-planning services and aftercare. And through its affiliated company, Design Monuments, Striffler's also provides permanent markers and memorials crafted in stone, bronze, and other high-quality materials. Learn more at strifflers.com or call 412-678-6191.
We were talking about the difference between a paramedic and an EMT. It's something else I see sometimes painted on the sides of ambulances is advanced life support or basic life support. Obviously, there's a difference because they have the distinction on the ambulance.
Yeah, absolutely. Advanced life support is really, you know, where we will, you know, hook a patient up to the same cardiac monitor that's in the ER so that we can monitor their heart rate, their EKG, their arrhythmias, also being able to transport certain types of medications with IVs running, sometimes patients that are on a ventilator. So, you know, if you have a really critical patient that's in the ER and they then have to get transferred to a higher level of care, say down in Pittsburgh, we're able to continue that same level of care that they were getting in the ER for that 20 to 30 minute ride down to a Pittsburgh hospital.
Where basic life support ambulance does not have that capability.
Correct.
Does it? When I was a little kid, I remember, you know, watching the after school the TV show Emergency, and you know they would be transmitting the EKG information back to the hospital, and they're looking at the same. Does the telemetry go back to the hospital? Are they able to monitor the vital signs?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. We have the ability to not only, you know, hit a button and transport that through Wi-Fi to the hospital so that the doctors can see exactly what we're looking at, but then we also have the luxury now of being able to then transmit that information directly into our charting software.
Okay.
So it's already sitting there when we get back. Because, you know, back in the day, you would have a critical patient, you would have to hit print, you would use an entire roll of, you know, think of like a receipt that you get at Giant Eagle.
Yeah, sure.
Think of an entire roll of that, of nothing but a mile long of EKG rhythm, and you'd have to cut that and tape it to a piece of paper, copy that, scan it, attach that to your report. Now we can just hit a button and it imports all that entire data set directly into our charting.
You watch that show, and I was just a little kid, but in the 70s, it seemed very advanced, and I'm told that show helped spread techniques that the Los Angeles Fire Department was using, spread them all around the world. People were like, hey, I want that equipment too. How has the equipment – you've been in the emergency medical field for 26 years now. How has the equipment evolved over those
years?
Yeah,
it's constantly changing. You know, not only do our protocols seem to change every couple years, but every year there's always the latest, greatest technology that's out there. The basic standard equipment that we carry in an ALS ambulance, you know, like a cardiac monitor, the intubation stuff, that's all changed drastically from, you know, now when we intubate a patient, we have a little digital screen because it's like fiber optic. You can just kind of look at the screen and see exactly where you're going. Whereas, you know, when I started, it was just a laryngoscope blade with a light bulb that you had to screw in, and you had to get down there and look down the patient's airway to make sure you're visually going through that. And, you know, now that's all, you know, with a nice screen, nice color LCD screen. You know, it's just unbelievable, the tech that's out there. And, you know, like I was talking about, the charting software. We can now do that on our phone or on our tablet. And, you know, we all have the computers in the front of the ambulance that's tied into Allegheny County 911, so we can see where everyone's at and what our next call is, and any specific information that they don't want to put out on the radio, they can push that right to our terminal that's in the ambulance. But
that can give you some history information too. Hey, we've been called out three times to this house in the past.
Exactly.
Lady has a cardiac condition, or the gentleman has limited mobility issues or something like that.
And as great as the equipment is changing, which is beneficial for everyone, unfortunately, the price tag that's coming along with that change is not so palatable for most, you know, nonprofit type ambulance services. Now you're talking about, hey, we want this new piece of equipment, but now we got to go through the grant process to get it, and that can take 6 months to a year or two. I mean, I can think back to all the equipment we've gotten on a grant, and it's always been in like a 2 year cycle. You know, we get rejected 1 year, but we get it the second year. You know, so I mean, it's just that type of mismatch with, you know, kind of like what the needs are versus what can we afford to do, because it's not much. We rely heavily on the grant process.
I remember a fire chief telling me that the word he hated worst in the world was fire, because he said a truck is $40,000, but the same truck when you call it a fire truck is $80,000.
Yeah.
That the certifications, the standards get so much higher that the expense of everything, and we were talking a little bit about the history of emergency medical service, ambulances, as they were called, they didn't have all this equipment. That's why they could fit in a station wagon or in a small truck, because you didn't have all these capabilities.
Absolutely.
It's a double-edged sword.
Yeah, absolutely.
Paul Falavolito is chief of White Oak EMS, whiteoakems.com, 412-672. I was going to give the wrong number here. 5433 is the business line. Obviously, for emergencies in White Oak, dial 911. What sort of special events do you have coming up this year for the 40th anniversary?
So this 40-year anniversary, you know, we really started looking at it last year, you know, when we realized, hey, this is going to be our 40-year anniversary in 2024. And so we decided we wanted to celebrate it all year long instead of just doing one event. So every month this year has a theme to it that we post internally, where we're either doing stuff for our folks, for our employees and volunteers, or for the public. So we've already done an employee recognition month. I know this month right now we're doing family open house month, where we're going to allow all of our crew members to pick a couple dates this month where they can bring in their parents, their grandparents, their spouses, their children. And even bring their dogs too, because who doesn't want a picture of their cute puppy in the front seat of an ambulance? Why not?
Sure.
Right? And so we're going to let them come in. But the stuff for the public that we're planning on doing this year, we're in discussion right now with wanting to do a summer health fair in conjunction with UPMC McKeesport, to be able to do that for the public, and then also have a public open house that day. I know later in the year we're planning on, because all throughout the year I'll get asked to come and do talks at senior facilities, you know, about how to make the home safer so that someone doesn't trip or fall. So we're going to do those types of public events where we're going to go out and do some speaking engagements and stuff like that. And once we have those dates firm, we'll certainly post them on our website, put them out on social media.
When I see on social media going to the schools as well, I know White Oak has a community day in the summertime and different community events. I think White Oak is one of the communities that occasionally does a touch a truck event where little kids can come out and, like you said, get your picture taken in the front seat of an ambulance, but also see what the equipment is so that if an accident happens, they're not so scared.
Yeah, and maybe those types of events also help to inspire the next generation of EMS people.
That's a good place for us to take a pause, because that's the next thing I want to ask you is about what the career path is if somebody wants to become a paramedic or an emergency medical technician. We'll be back in 30 seconds to wrap things up.
Support for this broadcast comes from the City of McKeesport Fair Housing Office. Fair housing is your right, and the Fair Housing Act prohibits discrimination in housing because of race, color, national origin, religion, sex, gender identity, sexual orientation, family status, or disability.
That includes renting or buying a home, getting a mortgage, seeking housing assistance, or engaging in other housing-related activities. For more information about Fair Housing Act protections in the city of McKeesport, call 412-675-5020, extension 635.
You have a podcast. We haven't even talked about that yet. People can find the Paul Falafelito podcast. What are some of the topics that you've been covering?
So I do a leadership podcast. That started off specifically just for my leadership team at White Oak EMS, and then I just decided to, why not just put it up on iHeartRadio and put it out on Spotify and just see what it does, and lo and behold, it just kind of took off.
Yeah.
And it was a kind of a great thing for me to sit back and watch happen, and I enjoyed doing that. But, you know, leadership is one of those things that I think a lot of people miss, the concepts and the idea of it. I think that all public safety, EMS, police, and fire, we are great managers of things as they happen because we get called to all these, you know, A through Z type emergencies, and we're all great at being able to jump on those situations and manage our way through them. But leadership's about people, and I feel like that's the missing piece for a lot of these agencies. And so that's kind of what I wanted to focus on, are all the little nuances and ins and outs of leadership and how that connects to people. And that's kind of the message that I put out on my leadership podcast and try to convey to my staff, is we need to be more in the business of people when it comes to leadership than just managing a situation.
Which leads me to my next question. Let's say you mentioned if a young person, or maybe not a young person, maybe somebody who's looking for a career change, comes to one of the events that you guys are having this year, or hears this podcast, or visits an open house, or maybe like me, they grew up watching DeSoto Engage on Emergency, and was it Station 54
right.
or 51, whatever it was, and they're like, hey, that is a career path for me. Where do they start out at? What would you recommend?
Yeah, so we do have a ride-along program.
Yeah.
You know, if you're 16 or older, you can certainly come down, do a couple ride-alongs with a crew and see if it's truly a field that you want to get into. And then from there, someone will just enroll in any number of the EMT schools that are out there in Allegheny County, Westmoreland County, Washington County, Fayette County. They can get that training anywhere, and they can come right out of EMT school into a full-time job at any number of services, because every service is hurting tremendously right now.
I see they're all seem to be recruiting. I see on Facebook. I see in Craigslist, Monster.com. They're all seem to be hiring right now.
Absolutely. And then once you kind of get into the field as an EMT, the bulk of the people will generally spend about a year as an EMT and then make a decision, do I want to go to paramedic school now and take it a step further? And now in Pennsylvania, there's even one more new step in there. It's called advanced EMT, where they teach you even more paramedic stuff that an EMT can do, but not the full paramedic certification. So there's really a great path for people that are really into wanting to help people, that are into medicine, that don't want to go to, you know, a full, you know, nursing school or becoming a physician, where they can go out in a couple years and get this training and be out in the field and truly make a difference in people's lives.
Is it helpful if they've had some Army or Navy or Marine Corps experience, or they've been in the National Guard or something?
Yeah, absolutely. It's helpful and it's very beneficial to them. In Pennsylvania, and again, I forget how it crosses over, but if you were like a corpsman in the military, you contact the Pennsylvania Department of Health and they'll tell you, does that equal being a paramedic or does that equal being an EMT?
Okay. The other thing is it's not necessary to have a 2-year or 4-year college degree. I guess it might be helpful, but you don't necessarily need one.
Yeah, no, you don't. In fact, I was kind of in the last class, you know, I can remember I got my paramedic in 1997, I believe. And then the very next year, they offered the same paramedic class with an associate's degree attached to it.
But it might be if someone like you wants to become a chief someday or be in senior leadership, I guess it might be helpful to have a degree in business administration or something.
Yeah, I mean, any sorts of degrees are always, I think, beneficial and helpful for anybody. But, you know, honestly, the way that EMS as a business model and as a field is today, the people that are just showing up and with that commitment is far outweighing the degree, believe it or not.
How can people support their local agency? You mentioned that your agency is a 501c3 nonprofit. I think a lot of people probably assume that I pick up the phone, I call an ambulance, and Medicare or Medicaid or Blue Cross or Blue Shield or Health America or whatever pays for that ambulance. That is not necessarily so, is it?
Yeah, no, not at all. In fact, that's the number one phone call that I get. Get ready to buckle up for this one because I'm about to drop it for you.
All right, go ahead.
So kind of the way it works is I'll get the phone call a dozen times a week from an angry resident. Why did I get a bill? I have insurance. So way back in the day, there was a time when health insurance used to be great at covering 100% of that bill. Not the case in the last decade. Now they may cover 90%, 80%, 70%, but your rates are still going up, right, as the person that's the insured, and you're missing that in the fine print of your insurance. So whenever I, you know, people call me, I'm like, don't call me and be mad. Call your insurance company and ask them why they're not covering this. So unfortunately, we have to then turn around and pass that expense onto them in the form of a copay. Now, we have an ambulance plan subscription drive. It's 50, 60 bucks a year, depending on what category you fall in as a single or a family or if you're a senior citizen over 65, where for that amount of money, we can discount your bill up to 50%. So if you get a bill that, say, and you're not a subscriber to our service, and that bill's $500 as your copay, then that's your bill. If you're a subscriber, we can discount that bill up to 50%, knock it down to $250 for you. So that's the real benefit of joining that plan. Unfortunately, and I'm a numbers guy and I run these statistics every year and they never change, only 33% of our residents subscribe to that ambulance
plan. So when they get that letter in the mail from Baldwin EMS or McKeesport Ambulance Rescue Service or White Oak EMS or whatever their local agency is and it goes into the circular file,
yeah,
they really need to be opening that up and thinking about the fact that if they're involved in an incident and they need that 911, they need that ambulance there.
Absolutely, because that money really supplements us, you know, above and beyond what our borough supports us with. And again, I'm very thankful and we're very, you know, blessed to have such a supportive borough council.
Well, that's another thing. Like many boroughs and many townships do not donate anything towards
their
local.
Correct.
When we've seen some EMS agencies go out of business. I think we've seen some in Westmoreland County recently go out of business.
Absolutely. There are some. So that's why I say we're very blessed to have the council that we have that support us the way that they do. Unfortunately, again, it's not enough and it's not their fault. I mean, they only have a certain budget. But rising costs of equipment, like you talked about earlier with a truck, you know, we used to be able to get a truck, you know, for $60,000, $70,000. Now that's more like $130,000, $140,000 vehicle.
Yeah.
So there's really a lot of ways that the public can help us. That ambulance plan subscription is probably the number one. The other number I'll drop on you is 6 out of 10 of the patients we transport are not plan members.
Yeah.
You know, and it just, you know, I wish that, you know, I wish we could get that out, you know, above and beyond. And we go to the White Oak Community Day. We talk about this ambulance plan throughout the year. You know, we go out to the senior homes and talk to them about the ambulance plan and how it can benefit them because, again, I get it. A lot of the elderly is on a fixed income, big budget. But this will help them in the unlikely event that they do need an ambulance. And their insurance doesn't necessarily pay for 100% of the bill.
Do you accept? You mentioned that volunteerism is way down, but you do still have a role for volunteers.
Yeah, we do. All of our board members are volunteers, which is great. Three of them are still paramedics, you know. So that's nice when they're available and they're able to, you know, jump in and help out at a lot of events like Community Day or Cleanup Day or stuff like that. You'll see them out driving around in a truck in uniform, which is very helpful. But yeah, I mean, if there's people that were out there that, you know, someone wanted to come and volunteer and go to EMT school, they could absolutely join our organization and, you know, we would help support them throughout the entire school.
Paul Falavolito is chief of White Oak EMS and they are celebrating their 40th anniversary. Thank you so much for coming in, Paul.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening this week to Two Rivers 30 Minutes, broadcasting from the Tube City Center for Business and Innovation in downtown McKeesport. So long for now. You've been listening to Two Rivers 30 Minutes, copyright Tube City Community Media Incorporated. Opinions expressed on this
program are not those of Tube City Community Media Incorporated. Listener support makes this program possible. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible contribution, please visit our website at TubeCityOnline.com and click on the donate link. You can also get a free subscription to this program and other podcasts at our website using Apple's iTunes or Stitcher.com. If you've got a question or comment, we hope you'll write to us. Our address is Tube City Community Media Incorporated, P.O. Box 94, McKeesport, PA, 15134. You can email us at TubeCityTiger@gmail.com or call us at area code 412-614-9659. And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Tube City Online.